is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The spring of 2021, within weeks of President Biden's inauguration, his national security advisor, Andrew Sullivan, and most importantly, the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, meeting with their opposite numbers in the Republic of Korea, South Korea, and Japan. And the conversation is about working together. I welcome Josh Rogan, writing global opinions for the Washington Post, because those preliminary meetings led to the Biden administration getting lucky. An election in South Korea and an election in Japan leave us with two men who are interested in working together. That would be Prime Minister Kishida of Japan and President Yoon of South Korea. Josh, a very good evening to you. They could not have known, Blinken and Sullivan, when they started the conversation, that Yoon and Kishida would be there, would be available for them. So I regard this as luck. But then again, luck is the residue of hard work. The Biden administration, what is this vision that we saw come together on Camp David within these last days? Good evening to you.
Oh, good evening, John. Well, you know, most people following U.S. foreign policy in Asia for the last 2 years have followed almost exclusively the U.S.-China bilateral relationship. It's natural to think that way. That's how our media is focused. That's how Congress is focused. Will they, won't they? Washington and Beijing, Cold War II, whatever you want to call it. But while all eyes were focused on that, something much more interesting was actually going on behind the scenes. And we didn't know about it. We didn't hear about it. It was being done quietly. But what was happening is that the United States and its two chief East Asian allies, military allies, strategic allies, Japan and South Korea, were coming together. And this happened for a number of reasons, some of them planned and some of them not planned. But it really is the biggest change in the strategic landscape in East Asia in decades. And it required Japan to move towards South Korea, which, as you pointed out, could only have been done if the current prime minister, Fumio Kishida, came to power, which nobody knew at the time that they started this. And it required South Korea to forgive Japan for its World War II atrocities to a degree. And that could only have been done by President Yoon, who in their system is more Japan-friendly because he used to live in Japan, he's an iconoclast, and he came in a mandate to sort of fight, you know, the rise of China. And so for all of the stars aligned for the Biden people, and they very sort of smartly, you know, decided to take advantage. And the Camp David meetings a couple of weeks ago, where President Biden and these two leaders came together for the first time ever, is the physical manifestation of that.
There was a previous meeting of these three, you're reporting, in the spring of 2022, June, during the NATO summit in Madrid. And that is wonderful to entertain. Were they at that point dealing with China as the threat, Russia as the threat? Do they make a distinction when they're talking about the present challenges?
Right. Well, when the three leaders met at that NATO summit in Madrid last year, Beijing went nuts. The Chinese Communist Party immediately came to believe that the United States is trying to start NATO in Asia. And if you read a lot of the Chinese Communist Party propaganda these days, it's about how bad it would be if the Americans succeed in building a NATO in Asia. It's the last thing they want. The funny thing about that is nobody has any intention of building an Asian NATO. It's not a real thing. It's not a possibility. Asia is not Europe. It's a very different place. But the fact that Japan and South Korea came to that NATO summit and stood together and against Russia and its invasion of Ukraine shows that at least there are some big democracies in Asia who think that the way that that a lot of people in Washington think, which is that the Russia-China threat is one threat, that they're on one side and we as free and open societies in both Europe, in North America, and also in Asia have the same interests and the same values, and that those things are important. So, you know, not all of Asia feels that way. You go around Asia, you'll find a lot of different views. There's not an Asian NATO, but there is a growing sense among Japan and South Korea that they're throwing their lot in with the West.
I'm keen on the opinion of one Asian watcher who's in Asia, the ambassador to Japan from the United States, Rahm Emanuel, former vigorous member of Congress representing, I believe, Central Chicago, former chief of staff of the president of the United States, Rahm Emanuel, and you've talked to him before and you've written a column about him before, is always in motion. So what is his vision of this conversation between the three of them in Camp David?
Right. Well, this is something that Ambassador Emmanuel was involved in very intimately. In Japan, they call him the Rombassador. Okay, they love Ambassador Emmanuel because he's so active. He's like an energizer buddy. He just keeps doing stuff, whether or not the White House asked him to. And one of the things he did was work on this. And he hosted a lot of the meetings and he brought a lot of these people together and he spent a lot of time, not just on this, but also bringing countries like the Philippines into the fold and having them meet with the Koreans and the Japanese and doing this all in Tokyo, you know, a lot of it his own initiative. And so, you know, sometimes that's what you need in these situations to get these kinds of big initiatives over the line is, you know, that extra person who for some reason decides to care and devote a lot of time and political capital to this. And I think that has a lot to do with why we're here.
Yeah, Jeropus. Yeah, what is that?
That's you know, we have like AUKUS, which is Australia, the United States, and the UK. And then we have things like the Quad, which is the United States, Australia, India, and Japan. So Jeropus, if you spell it out, is Japan, Republic of Philippines, and US. It's the idea that those three countries would have their own group. And it is a word that I can reveal to you that Rahm Emanuel invented himself.
I like it, Jeropus. Now, there's another part of East Asia that is always in the news. And you attended a luncheon in New York recently, welcoming and honoring a man passing through. I want to be careful here. Not a visit, but a passing through on his way to Paraguay or returning from Paraguay. His name is Lai. Who is he, Josh?
Well, William Lai is the vice president of Taiwan, and he is also the leading candidate in the upcoming presidential elections out of four candidates. He has a plurality, not a majority of support, according to the polls. So he could be the next president of Taiwan as early as next year. And, you know, for those two reasons, the Chinese government was very opposed to him stopping in New York and San Francisco on his way back and forth from Paraguay. But these are things that vice presidents of Taiwan do, including the president of Taiwan, Tsai Ing-wen, who did it recently. But anyway, because William Lai is perceived by Beijing to be more pro-independence and more anti-Chinese Communist Party than the alternatives, they attack him at every turn. And I went to the lunch where he spoke to a bunch of Taiwanese Americans, and I heard him out. And as it turns out, he's not quite the firebrand, hothead, you know, war-mongering separatist that the Chinese Communist Party would have you believe. He's actually pretty conventional in the sense of a leading party, what they call the DPP party candidate in Taiwan. And, you know, I think that's important for people to understand.
A detail about Taiwan that you and I have talked about before, but I want to restate it for the audience. Republic of China, People's Republic of China, Taiwan. What is the dispute that is generated by Beijing about this?
You know, for over 50 years, a fragile but somewhat consistent equilibrium has existed whereby the people on this island known as Taiwan say that they're the Republic of China, and the people who rule in Beijing say that they're the People's Republic of China, and they agree to disagree over who rules over who, and they both basically operate as independent countries. Now, since Xi Jinping came to power, he wants to change that. Right, he's promising to reunify peacefully or otherwise. This is a direct threat to the freedom of those 23 million people on this island who don't all agree with each other and all have different views and different ties to mainland China. So this is essentially is the powder keg that could spark the next war between China and its neighbors and pull in the United States. And for that reason, it's one of the most sensitive issues in U.S. foreign policy, Chinese foreign policy, and really one of the most dangerous places on earth. And, you know, managing that has been skillfully has been one of the things I think the Biden administration has done. But I'm here to tell you that, you know, having been to Taiwan recently, the situation there is getting only more dangerous, and we're going to have to pay more attention to it going forward.
And William Lai is knowledgeable about these matters. They're not choosing an appeaser. Is that correct, Josh?
You know, William Lai supports the part of Taiwanese society, is supported by the part of Taiwanese society that wants to tell Beijing, no, we're not going to ever be a part of China, and that's that. And, you know, there's another school of thought, and there are a lot of people in Taiwan who are not necessarily opposed to cutting a deal with Beijing. And, you know, it seems that after the Chinese crackdown in Hong Kong, that the support for the distrust of Beijing is at an all-time high in Taiwan. That's why William Lai is about to be the next president of Taiwan. And in my view, it's Beijing's choice whether or not that has to be a crisis or not. And if they're willing to work with him, and if they're willing to understand that Taiwan is a country in everything but diplomatic recognition, that then there, I think there's peace and stability to be had. But Xi Jinping is indicating that he's going to go another way. And I think that's why the world needs to and is increasingly coming to the support of Taiwan as their situation gets ever more precarious.
All right. Two elections in East Asia, in Korea, South Korea, and in Japan. The Biden administration has somebody to work with. Is William Lai a third election if he wins? Is this a third person the Biden administration is ready to work with? Can they get lucky a third time?
Yes, I think William Lai has demonstrated that he's a responsible leader who wants to manage the situation in a responsible way, and therefore would make a really good partner for the United States. And I think there are other people around Asia who you could point to who feel the same way. The problem is that, you know, all of these countries are coming under severe pressure economically, militarily, information warfare, cyber warfare from Beijing in an increasing way. So it's great to have partners to work with, but if they don't have trust in us to do what we need to do to give them confidence that we're going to be president in the region, then that friendship isn't really worth much at the end of the day.
We turn to the fact that we're in election mode. Mr. Biden is seeking re-election. There are challengers on the Republican side who have opinions. And Josh has written of those opinions in the most recent presentation in Milwaukee. When we come back, this is CBS Eye on the World with Josh Rogan of the Global Opinions for the Washington Post. And I'm John Batchelor.